I'm Stephen M. Hall, MD, an integral physician.
And I'm Grace Porter, a licensed psychotherapist. And together, we're the 7 Tools, a company focused on your personal growth and transformation.
And you are here with us for the Change for Good Summit. This year, we're focusing on building resilience in anxious times.
This summit is full of deep conversation and practical advice. We hope you enjoy this interview.
So now let's dive in. Hello, and welcome back to the 2019 Change for Good Summit, Building Resilience in Anxious Times. I'm Stephen Hall with the 7 Tools, and I'm really honored to bring you our next speaker who has a unique perspective on reducing and addressing your anxiety. So we may only identify a situation as conflict when it reaches a certain pitch or intensity, but in reality, we're constantly working things out, negotiating, making compromises, decisions, choices. And for many of us, this provokes anxiety. So I've only known Mari for a short time, but I find her a wonderful example of convergent evolution because she's coming from the perspective of an attorney, and yet she's discovered that many of the ideas and concepts that we generally relegate to natural healing and spirituality and spiritual growth are also powerfully effective in conflict resolution. So I think that you're going to find what she has to say incredibly enlightening. So Mari has been an attorney and mediator for over 30 years. She's the author of 5 books and hosts a radio show, Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict into Collaboration. Mm-hmm. She's been featured on NBC, ABC, Lifetime, Fox News, and has the host of a PBS TV special. She's a healer of conflict, and Mari teaches clients and audiences how to transform communication breakdowns into relationship breakthroughs. So that's very healing, yeah. So with Mari's solution engineering tools, you will build resilience to conflict challenges and deal easily and effectively with disagreements. So today we're going to talk with Mari about how to use solutioneering to build resilience in conflict situations. So welcome, Mari.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. You know, last time we did it where I interviewed you, so this is really fun.
It is fun to turn it around. So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got interested in this kind of work?
Well, you know, I'm a holistic lawyer. And I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but in effect, really, is I am very spiritual, I am holistic, I make sure that when I'm meeting with clients, I look at the underlying causes of the conflict so that we can resolve it. And so I feel very good about the fact that we can transform conflict into collaboration. Sometimes if I'm doing divorce, sometimes people get back together. Sometimes they don't, but at least they can co-parent. And for businesses, sometimes partners can work together again. And then, of course, if they can't, at least we can resolve things without a terrible, very expensive court battle.
Yeah.
So that's my perspective on 33 years in practice, and I just don't believe that fighting is the way to go. It's more enlightened to problem solve, which I call solutioneering. It's a higher form of problem solving.
Yeah, so that's the first time I've seen that word. And
it's my word that I made up.
But I wonder if you could tell us a little more about it, because it sounds kind of like engineering, where you construct a solution to a problem, but it also sounds a little like mountaineering, go on a journey or an adventure.
Yeah. It is a journey. You know, some people say, let's problem solve. Well, that's such a negative word that when I say, let's look at the problem and problem solve, everybody got negative and they got, into their own adversarial positions. Or if I say, look, there is a solution in every issue, any kind of disagreement, there's a solution sitting within it if we look for it. And so it's almost like Michelangelo said when he did the David, that he had this block and he said, I didn't create the Michelangelo, the David, I just took off the layers to find it. And that's what I'm saying, that when I get into a situation where people are in conflict and I'm the mediator, I peel off the layers to get to the cause and what they really want. And then we find solutions. So that's why I call it solutioneering.
Well, that's great. That because otherwise, if you say problem solve, your subconscious mind focuses on the problem, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So tell us about how conflict causes stress and anxiety.
Right. Well, you as a doctor know this even better than I do, but I see it all the time because I live conflict for a profession for 33 years. So what happens is someone says something to you offensive or disrespects you or disagrees with you. What happens? Well, immediately, what? Chemicals get created. Your amygdala, which are the two little almond-shaped primitive parts of our brain, either go to fight, flight, or freeze. And that causes cortisol and adrenaline and all sorts of chemicals in our bodies that causes stress. Cortisol causes stress. And sometimes if a saber-toothed tiger were, you know, after you, you'd want that because it would give you that energy to protect yourself and survive. But when you're in an argument with your spouse or your kids or your business partner or a colleague, you don't want to have that happen because you will not have your more, logical brain, which is the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive functioning. You want that to be in charge rather than your primitive brain, which is, you know, you fight, you beat somebody up, or you run away, or you just don't say anything, you don't know what to do. Right. So that's how it causes stress. And people who don't know how to deal with conflict don't realize that it is really something that can be a gift in disguise. If they don't realize that, then it becomes even more stressful.
Yeah. So you mentioned you deal with conflict all day long, and that's got to be stressful for you, you know, sort of in the same way, you know, it's hard as a physician to deal with people that are critically ill or terminally ill. And
yes.
And so how do you take care of yourself?
Well, first of all, I know that you know this, and everybody listening to this knows it, that conflict is contagious, right? It's like a contagious disease.
Like a virus.
Unless you put up your immunity, you are going to react, right? It's so you walk into a room and everybody's in anger, right? You're going to feel that energy, right? Everybody feels it. And so for me, I have to prepare myself. I meditate every morning. But before I walk into a conflict situation, I go in again and I see myself. This is my spiritual side. I get very centered. I breathe into my solar plexus. I envision people smiling and shaking hands at the end. And I walk in with a very positive attitude. So my energy is soothing and serene. And I have food and I have drinks and I have things that, you know, soft music in the background. So that's how I prepare not only myself, but the room. And when someone gets really hot, okay, I ring my Asian bell and everybody has to stop until the bell stops. And then I say, okay, let's start again. Tell us what you really want. Instead of let's not have attacks, let's not have blame, let's talk about what's important to you and what you really want. So I refocus on a solution rather than a complaint. So I prepare myself. And if somebody comes at me, I have an 8-step process that I can go over, my hard love process, that I use all the time to prepare myself so that I don't get, you know, caught in the craziness. I don't get hijacked.
So what I'm hearing is before you go into a conflict situation, you take time to consciously choose what energy you're going to contribute to that situation.
Right.
And you want it to be calming, healing, centering kind of energy, right?
Yes, it's good for me and it's good for them.
Yeah, now,
let's say I walk into a situation and I had no prior idea that it was going to be conflict. Mm. All right. You know, I mean, we do that. We'll walk in and our business partner will yell at us for something that we had no idea that was going on, or a client will call us, or a patient.
Right.
You know, and you're just like taken blindsided, right? That happens to us too. So that's when I go in and I don't, and that's when I use my 8-step process that I'm happy to share with you.
We'll get
it. I am ready. I have the tool so I don't get hijacked in those situations either.
And how long does it take you? Like, are you able to do it within a second or two?
Yeah. At first, you know, when you learn my 8 steps, which I'll give you in a minute, it takes you a while to, it's like anything else. Like you ride a bike, you know, you don't have to think about getting on the bike and riding the bike or driving your car. But when you first do it, you have to kind of think, oh, I got to do this, this, this. But automatically, then it becomes an automatic thing that you think, okay. And so for me, when that happens, I have to get conscious for like a second or two, and then I go into the steps.
Good. So that's good for people to hear that it does get easier with practice.
Yes.
These things we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, so you've talked about these 8 steps. So, and you said you can use these 8 steps to transform conflict in any situation.
Any situation.
So,
a spouse, with a kid, with anybody, you know, with anybody, it works. And there are times that, you know, if someone is like on drugs or something and they just can't stop, then you get away, but you get away gently. You don't engage, you disengage, and that's the final step. Yeah.
So my sense is, you know, when I watch my patients and how their relationships evolve is, you know, most people are pretty in love when they get married. And then by the time they're ready to divorce, things have evolved. And so my sense is if they could maybe start doing these steps earlier in the relationship, it might not actually get to that point where there's so much anger and resentment and disrespect and all that stuff going on. That.
Right. You know, in my 33 years of doing divorce mediation, I've learned about this. And the things that cause people to come to me for a divorce is anger that they can't control, blame, accusations, cheating, and a huge one is just being disrespectful to each other. That's kind of like the overall umbrella. You know, I am disrespectful if I have an affair or if I'm accusing or attacking or blaming. So the overall umbrella really is disrespect. And so the steps that I use are great. I mean, I'm with my husband 30 years and we practice what we preach, and we still like romance. We still are in love. And, you know, my first marriage wasn't like that, and neither was his, but we learned and we practice what we preach.
So you have the acronym HARD LOVE.
Yes.
2 4-letter words for these 8 steps. So can you run through those?
Okay. So HARD LOVE to transform a relationship. Let's say, Steve, that a patient comes in and screams at you for absolutely no reason. Just is, I don't know, what's the matter with them? They're having a bad day. So the first thing you do is get conscious and say halt to yourself, not to him or her. Okay. And you just breathe. Breathe into your solar plexus, breathe into your lower belly. That's the first step. And that gets you conscious, because once you are slowly breathing and being conscious of that, then you're kind of getting away from that amygdala hijack, okay? You're going to get yourself enough serenity that you get back to your prefrontal cortex so that you can be logical, okay?
Mm.
And then you do A, well, that was H for hard, A is the second letter, and that's anger control. You actually feel, where am I feeling that anger in my body? Because you will, okay? Some people, it's in their shoulders. For me, it's in my solar plexus. Some people, their face gets hot, okay? So you get in touch with where you're feeling it. Again, you're getting into your body. R is you reverse the reaction. So let's say you feel a tightness in your shoulders. You send soothing, relaxing energy to your shoulders. For me, I feel like a knife is in my solar plexus. I take that knife out immediately. Then I disengage from any of their anger. I just don't allow it. I like put up a golden shield and don't allow it to come through. So that's hard. H, halt. A, anger control. R, reverse the negative reaction in your body. And D, disengage. Don't react. Okay, then for L, listen actively. And what I mean by that is just because you listen does not mean you agree. So if I'm listening to someone who's screaming at me, I'm just breathing the entire time. I'm listening actively, effectively. I'm listening to what they say for cues of what's really going on. So I just had a mediation this morning that someone was screaming not only at me, but at his spouse. And we just stopped and listened. And then I came back after listening actively. I said, we got to O, which is openly mirror. I repeated back without the four letter words. I repeated back and I said, I hear you say that you're not comfortable with A, B, and C. Okay. I heard you say that you want to do this instead. Did I get that right? And then he calmed down to where his voice was very serene and he goes, yeah, that is how I'm feeling. And yeah, this is what I want. So then I got to V, which is voice open-ended questions. I said, well, tell me more about that. How can we make that work with what she wants? We know she wants this. You want this. Tell me what you think is best of how can we make this work? Okay, so that way, I could say, you know, I'm not quite sure I really understand. Please explain more. So I want to get as much information as I possibly can to see, help me with what the solution might be. And also it helps me to understand the underlying interests and the underlying feelings that are going on so that I can squelch that conflict and get into a lively but, you know, logical discussion. And then finally, E, embrace solutions. This is when I say, well, okay, now that I know what you want, you've told me so much, how about this? What do you think of this idea? What do you think of this idea? And then we engage in what I call solutioneering. So H is halt. Don't, you know, just breathe. Mm-hmm. A is anger control. Figure out where it is in your body. R, reverse negative reaction. Reverse whatever is happening in your body. D, disengage, don't react. L, listen actively. O, openly mirror what they say without the bad words. V, voice open-ended questions to find out as much as you can about how they're feeling. And E, embrace solutions by talking with them, but what do you think we should do? How about this? How about that? And it gets the whole conversation logical. How does that sound?
That sounds really great. And I had a couple questions about it.
Okay.
So, how do you deal with someone who feels like if you don't agree with them, you haven't heard them?
Yeah. So I repeat what they say. You know, I say, gee, I heard you say that you don't want to sell the house, but you also don't want to pay her out. Did I get that right? Yes, you got that right. Okay, so then I will go and I'll say, okay, so let's talk about what you want and what can happen if you were to go to court, for example. So that's how I deal with it. I usually ask, did I hear that correctly? Yes. Or if I didn't hear it correctly, I'll say, if they say no, then I'll say, okay, could you say it slightly differently? I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Tell me again. And then they tell me, and then I again repeat back, sometimes reframing if it was nasty, okay? Sometimes they'll do that. But if it's not nasty, I'll tell them exactly what they told me. So then they know I'm listening.
Okay. And but then you also tell them that you don't necessarily have to agree with them to have heard them, right?
Right, right. And so then I explain to them that everybody has a perspective, that they see the facts from their perspective, and that's okay. Yeah. You know, we all have different experiences. So I talk about, this is your perspective, and you have every right to that perspective. And you have a right to your perspective. So I may have several people, five people in the room, they all have different perspectives. And I say, every one of you are right, but how does that help us if we have these different perspectives and we stick to them, we're not going to get a deal. So, or we're not going to resolve this. So given what's most important to you, how do you think we can resolve it? Given that you have this perspective, sometimes I'll say, you know what? It's okay that you have that perspective, but you can have it. But now what do we do?
Yeah. And
then they have to start thinking and solutioneering.
So one thing it sounds like you offer your clients, which I think is incredibly important, is that sense of being heard. And when I think back, when I was a kid, I can only remember one time when I felt really heard. And that still is an amazing experience to me to this day. So to be able to offer somebody that experience of really being heard, that's probably why that man calmed down, for example.
Yes.
You offered him that. So is that sort of what you're trying to do with the open-ended questions? Can you talk a little more about why open-ended questions are so important?
Yeah, open-ended questions are so important because you want to hear from them. Even if you don't agree with them, you want to say, you want to hear it. And once you ask those open-ended questions, they feel like they're being legitimized. My perspective is legitimized. My thoughts are legitimized. So if I only ask yes or no, are you going to do this? You know, like if you're in court, you know, did you go there at 8 o'clock at night? You know, no. But I want to tell you more. They don't let you. But if I say, gee, you know, tell me more about why it was, you know, so important that you went there at 8 o'clock at night. Tell me what you were going to do. And then you don't interrupt. You let them say, even if you don't agree. You know, what I usually don't say, I don't agree. I'll say them something. I understand that perspective and I see it differently. Or if I'm talking to them about something legal, I'll say, you know, I understand. That makes sense from your perspective. Unfortunately, the court has a different perspective of that.
The law sees it.
Yeah. Or, you know, I see it a little differently. So I don't say I disagree with you. I never use that. Mm. I never say I disagree. I just say, you know what, I see it differently. But I've heard them first. And if I hear the other side first, they're more likely to be open to hear my side.
Mm. That's maybe true too. Yeah. So you have a book called Fighting for Love.
Yes, I do.
Intimacy.
Right. It's right here. I have a book called Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict Into
Intimacy. Hold it back
up.
It's not focusing.
And it's a couple's guide. Yeah, it's a couple's guide. And I wrote it with a man who is a therapist, not my husband. He's just a good friend and he's very spiritual. And we wrote it from the yin yang, you know, male female approach. He's a therapist. I'm an attorney mediator. He tries to put people back together. I try to help them come apart in a loving and peaceful way. So we wrote this book together about all the things about how to turn conflict back into intimacy. And most of the time, if you get it early, you can revive a love relationship. If, however, you've had years of blame and guilt and fears and all these things, at least you can part and say thank you for all the gifts of learning, but it's time for us to let it go. So of the 12 chapters, 11 is how to make it work. The 12th one is, if you can't make it work, how can you at least, you know, be kind to one another during the process without killing each other and dissipating all your money and if you have kids. So, and every chapter has exercises, and I did every one of these exercises with my husband after I would do the chapter, and it was really, even for us, it was like, wow, I didn't know you felt that way, you know? I mean, and we've been together all these years, so it really did get us a lot closer. And then I actually took 8 couples to a romance rendezvous retreat, people who'd been married over 20 years that, you know, they were complacent, not ready for divorce, but just complacent. And you should have seen everybody, you know, putting the do not disturb on their door. And it was really cute. It was really fun.
So who would be a good person to read this book?
I think anyone who's either in a relationship or thinking about not being in a relationship, or someone who wants to be in a relationship, because we talk about, if you're single, you know, how do you attract the right person and how do you engage with the right person?
Right.
So, but couples get the best out of it. Couples who are complacent, or they just want to get more romantic again, or they're contemplating divorce and they really don't want a divorce. That's who it's for.
Mm. And so it has a website,
writingforlovenow.com, and it's available on Amazon as well. Yeah. And then I do workshops. Sometimes we've done workshops together, my co-author Leonard Simchuk and I, and sometimes I do them alone, and I do retreats, and we have a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoy it too. We do a lot of fun exercises to really connect at a deep level.
That sounds really cool. Yeah. I haven't checked it out yet, but I think I will. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've been mediating divorce for over 30 years. And what have you learned about what doesn't work?
Yeah, I told you a little bit before about what doesn't work is when you're disrespectful to each other. And, you know, the blame game, blame, guilt. That is the huge destruction of any kind of relationship, right?
Yeah.
So what does work is really, I want to get to the 4 A's. There's really 6, but I'm going to just give you 4 of them, because I know those work. I even have a chart for my clients who really want to work on the 4 A's. Mm-hmm. They chart themselves. Where are they? And what have they done? And what has their spouse done? Let's see. The 4 A's of a loving relationship. So this works for me, and I remind myself and my husband when he doesn't do these things. So the first one is acceptance. And someone like me, who's a lawyer, who, you know, I have a tendency to tell people what to do because they ask me.
Right?
So I have to be careful, because I want to tell people to do what to do. And my husband doesn't like that. So acceptance means I accept him for who he is. He's very different from me. He's more introverted. And, you know, I have to accept, if he doesn't want to go to a big party that I want to go to, I have to accept that. Either that or negotiate for something that he wants, you know?
Right.
So acceptance is big, is like someone who's trying to change you all the time, you feel very disrespected if someone's trying to change you. So acceptance means, you know, you accept them for who they are. They're different from you. If they weren't different from you, you probably wouldn't be in that relationship. You need that difference. The second one is...
Let's talk about that just for a second,
sure.
Because I see that so much in my practice where, you know, one person's trying to make the other person be different than they are. And And you're exactly right. The person who's being told to be different, what they're hearing is, well, that I'm not good enough the way I am.
Right.
And most of us have that fear anyway, or that belief that we're not good enough. And so that just feeds that fear in that person.
Exactly. And it feels so disrespected.
Yep.
I mean, if someone tells you, you need to change, then you feel so disrespected and so you're not legitimized at all. Now, in terms of acceptance, sometimes I'll say something to my husband and he dresses a certain way and we're going to a fancy party. I'll say something to him like, you know, honey, I think this is more of a, you know, dressy thing. Say, I'm getting dressed up. How do you feel about changing now? I don't want to push it on you, but I think the guys are going to be wearing at least jackets. If you don't want to wear a tie, that makes sense. But I'll say that. And so that, you know, he doesn't even really like that, but at least I say it in a gentle way without saying, hey, clothes look terrible or change your hair, right? So acceptance, but then there's, again, you can negotiate for things in a nice way. So I use negotiation. If I want to do something and he doesn't want to do it, I may not want to accept it, but I'll try and negotiate. I'll say something like, well, if you go with me to this movie, I'll go with you to that violent movie or something. So, you know, I turn it into a negotiation because that's what I do for a living. So yeah. if that doesn't work and he goes, no, I'm not going to that chick flick, then I'll say, okay, I'll go with my girlfriends. And I just let it be. So that's part of acceptance. So that's number one. And acceptance really relates to really respecting someone. Second one is affection. Affection is so important, whether it's a hug or, you know, a 4 or 5 second kiss, or just putting your holding hands. You know, we will hold hands. Even at church, I will hold hands. And I think that's so important for everybody. Touch is so important. Making love is important. And so it shouldn't be a chore to do any of these things. And if your spouse is not affectionate enough, you don't have to say, you're not affectionate enough. Or you don't have to say, well, I'm going to have an affair if you don't, you know, make love with me. I think you need to kind of talk it out and say, you know, I really need that touch. I love you. But, you can't, like, have a fight and then say, oh, let's kiss and make up, because the other person may not want it if it wasn't resolved. So affection, a lot of affection and talking nice to each other and saying sweet things like, I love you. I really, you know, think you look wonderful today. I just a pat on the head, you know, think about how your dogs need affection. That's what we need as well. So affection is very important. Did you have any questions on that one?
No, but I still had another comment on acceptance. What I usually tell people is, you know, the job of relationship is to accept the other person as they are. But I do think you have to put that caveat in there unless there's a deal breaker.
Yes.
Like if they're physically violent or, you know.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean anything like that. You're absolutely right. I'm not going to accept some. Well, that goes to boundaries, doesn't it? I have a whole chapter in my book on boundaries.
Oh, good.
You have to set boundaries. So accept them for who they are, unless they hurt you, you know? If they
a deal breaker of some sort, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So that's good. No, and I think affection, like I said, is really important. And then if the person is feeling like it is a chore to be affectionate to their partner, then they really need to look at that, right? That needs to be explored. Like, why isn't it just automatic? Why don't you, you know, what's going on that it's just not automatic that you want to touch your partner or be affectionate to your partner?
Right, right. And some, I hear complaints, some think that the only time he was ever affectionate is when he wanted to make love, you know, and then it wasn't really like making love, it was more like having sex. So, you know, I think that is a really important thing. And sometimes people didn't have affection growing up. Sometimes people need to go to a counselor to deal with that. because affection and hugging and touching is what makes us human, you know? So it is critically important. And if you don't have it, go to a counselor and see about that, or start, you know, some of the exercises in my book talk about, if there's a problem with that, kind of talk about your childhood with each other. Mm. You know, was your mom really affectionate? Was your dad affectionate? Was touch always gentle, or was touch spanking, you know?
Right.
Sometimes there's something you have to get over from your childhood. Yeah. The next one is appreciation. This one is an attitude of gratitude. I thank my husband for everything. He's thankful to me for everything. Every night before we go to bed, we say three things that we're thankful for. And that could be, and it's a great way to go to, you know, to go to sleep. So I'll say, you know, I really am grateful for what we did today. We took the dogs out and we had a lot of fun, and, you know, it was nice on a Saturday morning to get out of the house, whatever. And then we can even say, you know, I'm grateful that I had clients that resolved. And he'll say, I'm grateful that this room that I remodeled looks so beautiful. So it isn't just about us, but it's this attitude of gratitude and then being grateful to each other for everything. You know, if he comes home early and, you know, starts to make dinner and I'm home later, and I'll say, wow, thank you so much. I don't just take anything for granted. And I think that's so important. People need to be appreciated. So that's right. Third A.
And that, one of the things that happens, especially in long-term relationships, is, like you said, that people start taking things for granted, and that making sure you practice appreciation would sort of head that off at the pass.
Yeah, people will say to me, well, I said I was grateful about that 2 weeks ago. Well, say it again. You know, it doesn't cost you a penny to say you're grateful. You know, is it like, what's the big deal to say it again, right?
Yeah.
If you get in a habit of always saying, you know, I'm so grateful that we made love last night. I'm so grateful that you made dinner. I'm so grateful that the house is so clean. I'm so grateful that you picked up the kids without me even having to remind you. I'm so grateful that you did this for me. You know, it doesn't have to be, I'm grateful that you brought me a present or you know, flowers. It could be little things. Little things are what really counts, right?
Interesting. Okay. And that's really good to be mindful of that.
Yeah. Being mindful of saying thank you. You know, I mean, I say thank you to my paralegal for everything she does. I don't get complacent about saying thank you. So right now I'm going to say, Steve, thank you for inviting me on your show here.
I'm going to say thank you for being here.
And thank you for coming on my show. But and then the last one is assurance. And what I mean by that is that I know that if you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it. Or if you say you're not going to do something, you're not going to do it. And assurance also really is trust. And if I can't trust that you're not going to have an affair, that's a deal breaker for me. Okay. So I need to be able to trust you that if you're in working with other women, that you're going to be committed to me. I have to trust that when you say you're going to do something, that you're going to do it, that I can rely on you. I can trust that if I'm sick, you're going to be there to take care of me. So trust is huge. So that's what I meant by assurance. So the four A's are acceptance of who you are, affection, showing you love someone, appreciation of everything, having an attitude of gratitude, and finally, assurance, being trusting and trustworthy.
And one of the things that I would say to people is start practicing those four A's towards yourself.
Oh,
too.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then you'll have it to bring to your relationship.
Exactly. Those four things are really with everybody, right? I mean, yeah. With friends, with your family, with your kids. But especially if you're talking about a romantic relationship, I mean, your kids, they're going to grow up and go out of the house and you're going to make amends later. But with your significant other, they're not going to stand for it if those things aren't happening.
Right. No, you're right. So aside from mediation, I don't know how you do all these things that you do. It boggles my mind just to read them. But you also do coaching.
Yeah.
And you're especially concerned with how you say that women aren't taught to negotiate or to wash their boundaries.
Yes.
Is that a special issue you have?
Yeah, I've really learned that in our society, and I think we're seeing it with Me Too, right? Everybody has been angry, and instead of watching their boundaries with someone, they instead now are just angry. And it's understandable, but I have to say that no one had taught them to watch boundaries. And in so many of my divorces, I'll see that often, and it can happen with the man too, that he's not watching boundaries. But I would say most of the time in these people that I do their divorce, if they're especially 40 and over, not even just that, I would say, well, most of them come to me, they're married at least 7 years or something. But one party is dominant and tells the other one and tries to control the other one, right?
Yeah.
And so they either get in a fight and that breaks up, or they acquiesce. And they acquiesce, they get very angry. It's like a passive aggressive thing, right? Mm. So I coach a lot of women and tell them, you don't have to get angry. You can say, and here's the two sentences that even my son liked. He's a 40 years old and marketing expert, but he liked this. So if someone is pushing on you, you can say, you know, I'm really not comfortable with that. What, you know, you can't get in a fight about that. Just say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. And then you engage with, well, this is the reasons I'm not comfortable. Maybe we can talk about making it better. So that's one. And then the other one is if someone says, tell me right now, I want to hear right now what you're going to do. Then you just say very gently, you know, let me think about that. Just let me think about that. And then it gives you time to watch your boundaries.
And see how you feel and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, so those are two, they're so simple. All my clients, they write those two sentences down and they have it in session.
So I'm not comfortable with that, and let me think about that.
Yeah, they're so powerful because they don't engage in a fight. You know, you don't go like this. It's more like, let me think about that.
Or I statements instead of you statements, right?
Yes. You statements, anytime you say you, this is a huge issue. Anytime you say you with something negative, it starts the battle, the fight. Mm. It starts conflict. But if you say you with something nice, like you are a great interviewer, Steve, or you're such a great doctor, or you're doing so many wonderful holistic things for your patients, you know, that feels good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, anything negative will stir the conflict or feel disrespected. So when you use you, always say something nice. If you want it, if you're feeling something not nice, just say, I'm not comfortable with that.
Okay, and that's a good advice to keep in mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why is it you think, I mean, this may be kind of obvious, but you know, that women have a bigger issue with boundaries, especially personal boundaries in relationships.
Yeah, because I don't think, you know, for many, our whole society, women have not been taught in the business world as much, you know? I mean, now we have 50% of women are doctors, 50% of women are lawyers, but they still are not the power brokers, okay? That's the way it is. And yes, they're learning more now, but I think that has not been our culture. And we see that all around the world.
Right.
You know? But even in the United States, women are not treated equally. They don't have the same salaries, and they don't know how to ask for the same salary, and they don't know how to do it that's why we're seeing this Me Too, the anger. You don't know how to watch boundaries. I remember when I was young and beautiful, working for a lawyer in a law firm, that when I was going through my divorce with my first husband, he told me he could accommodate my sexual needs if I needed it because I was going through a divorce. So I was in such shock that I said, you know, I'm really not, you know, and he's my boss. I said, you know, I'm really not comfortable with that kind of talk with me. I'm very uncomfortable. And of course, we all know that could be considered sexual harassment. Now, you know, I think your intent was that you want to be kind and helpful to me. So please just remember that, you know, that's not a boundary that you can cross. So, you know, but I'm pretty assertive about things. So, but a lot of people would just think, oh my God, what do I do? And just get angry and storm out. Or
but did he fire you?
Yeah.
He did fire you?
No, he did not fire me.
Okay.
No, he didn't. He knew that I could file a lawsuit for sexual harassment. He knew. No, I watched my boundaries and he backed off.
No, that's a good example. That's a really good example because it's tough. I mean, that it's incredible how common sexual harassment goes on.
Yes.
How frequently it happens and frank sexual abuse and
And it's kind of a power thing. You know, and if someone has power over you, that they can do the quid pro quo thing. But I think women have to come into their power, not in a nasty way or coming across as a bitch or anything, but coming across as knowing who they are and being comfortable with who they are and knowing the skills that I'm teaching right now, you know, which is watching boundaries and being respectful.
Yeah. Yeah. And being respectful for yourself, because one of the things I talk about a lot is that relationships are mirrors.
Yes.
And they're mirroring back to you what's going on inside quite a bit. And so this comes up a lot, especially in people that have been in one abusive relationship after another.
Yes, they're not respecting themselves, right, Steve? Yeah.
Each new relationship starts out on a good foot, but pretty soon it turns to abuse. And and they start losing trust in themselves that they can pick somebody, right?
Right.
So they usually wall off and stop having relationships, but you're exactly right. When they can see, and they're usually not consciously aware that they're doing this, but when they can see that they formed a belief that they don't deserve or they're not worthy of, or, you know, and then once they see that and can start respecting themselves,
Right. Then
vast majority of the time they get into a relationship where that respect is being mirrored back to them.
Right. And that's the thing. A lot of times they need coaching because they don't recognize, they go, I don't want that again, but they don't recognize what is in them that is not watching those boundaries, that is not being aware of what those clues are, you know, like run fast when somebody is controlling you in that way. Right.
Yeah, no, that's really true. So, So this is really fascinating work. I really what we've been talking about is essentially like counseling or relationship counseling, and to come at it from starting out as the attorney, it's just so wonderful that you're doing that. So
well, it's really tools. I mean, people think like, you know, people forget that this is a skill that's learned. These skills are learned, and these tools. Like if I don't have the right tools, I can't build a house. If I don't have the right tools, I can't build relationships. If I don't have the right tools to deal with conflict, I'm going to be stressed out. For me, that every day I go into conflict, okay, I have to recognize that this is my opportunity to grow. I don't get all crazy. I get calm. So I think, yes, it can be stressful if you don't have the tools and the skills.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so you actually spend quite a bit of time teaching these tools and skills. Is that right?
Yes.
And you teach them to professionals like other attorneys or mediators and things?
Yeah, I'm a trainer for the bar, a certified trainer for the bar, and I teach others. But I like teaching everybody because it's so important. And so what I wanted to do as a bonus gift for anyone who's watching or listening to this is I want to teach a one-hour course that I told you about. And that would be it's a Zoom course where they come in and on December 6th at 12 to 1 p.m., it's a free class on how to negotiate for success. And negotiation is the same when you're in conflict, only it's, you know, a little bit more difficult. So learning to negotiate for to watch boundaries, learning to negotiate for anything, which we all negotiate all day long, learning the tools of it are applicable to conflict. So I'm willing to do that as a bonus for people who are watching this or listening to this summit.
Well, thank you. And we'll be able to, we'll post the connection with that on your, on the summit page.
Yes. Great.
And so I think, no, that's going to be great. So learning how to negotiate, just imagine what that could do to your anxiety levels if you have those tools, right?
Yeah, you feel so good because one of the key elements of power in negotiation is preparation. So if you prepare, then it's like, you know, if you don't prepare for a test in school, you get all nervous. But if you're really prepared, you feel confident, you go in, you go, you do a good job. The same with negotiation. If you're prepared, you feel confident, you don't have that anxiety and that stress, you go, okay, I have the tools, this is what I'm going to do. If somebody comes at me, I'm going to use the hard love. I'm going to do these things, and I'm not going to get out of control. I know I'm going to be doing great. That's how I feel. Hey.
So that's going to be a wonderful resource. And do you have any other resources? I mean, you've got your book. You've got your classes. You've got this free seminar coming up on December 6th. Any other resources you recommend for conflict resolution or negotiation?
Yeah, I did a lot of training. I did my Harvard negotiation training. There's wonderful books. My favorite teacher at Harvard when I did my negotiation training was Bill Urey. He has wonderful books. He has one of his first ones was Getting to Yes, then he has Getting Past No. He has a newer one called Getting to Yes with Yourself. You would love that. So yes, you can go on Amazon and just put in books and you'll see.
How do you spell his last name?
U-R-Y, William Urey, U-R-Y. Yeah, he wrote for my book, he wrote a testimonial too. So he has wonderful, easy books like that you will love on dealing with conflict. He's an international mediator. Yes, he mediates in the Middle East and But, yeah.
I was thinking they need you over there, too.
Yeah. I'm doing my part over here.
No, I know. I can imagine. Oh, well, that's interesting because part of the cranial training I took, obviously, is we learned some negotiation skills so we can get different aspects of people to start negotiating with themselves inside themselves.
Yes.
And so Getting to Yes was one of the books that we used in the class. Was it 25 years ago?
He wrote that many, many years ago. I trained with Bill Urey and Roger Fisher. They wrote it many, many years ago. It's been translated to so many languages. But Roger Fisher died about 5 years ago. But Bill is still around and kicking. And he also has a couple TED Talks. So if you go online and you put in William Urey, he has TED Talks, which are he's amazing. He's an amazing guy. He's not an attorney, but he taught at Harvard Law School. So,
wow.
But anyway, I hope this was good for you, Steve, because it's fun to talk to you.
So if you could leave our listeners with three tidbits of advice in building resiliency in relationships or for successfully navigating conflict, what would they be?
Okay, I would say always be respectful. Always be respectful. Always center yourself before you respond, react with somebody, always center yourself, breathe in, and always have an attitude of gratitude. That's three. But I would also say, think about not how you want to fight with someone, but think about how can we come to some kind of resolution that I can live with and you can live with.
Solutionary.
Yeah, the solutionary, and that hard love will save you every time. Save me on many occasions.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I know this is going to be a interview that people are going to listen to several times because there's so much good information here. So thank you.
I'm so grateful to be part of your wonderful summit. It's great.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Bye, everybody. And be sure and check out Mari's resources. I think you'll be very happy that you did.
Okay. Thank you.